You're listening to Interviews with Adam. I am your host, Adam Miller. And as we continue our Missions Emphasis Month, we are talking with various ministries around the world. And this ministry in particular is having a tremendous impact for those who are suffering with AIDS in the continent of Africa. We're talking with Bob and his wife, Joanna Graham. They have the South African Children's Resiliency Project. A long tongue twister there, Bob, but thank you so much for being a part of our Songtime ministry.
Yeah, we're happy to be here.
Why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit about the South African Children's Resiliency Project and what it does in specific?
Well, it's a long-term orphan care project. We basically empower African grandmothers in South Africa to basically take care of abandoned and orphaned children. So we basically increase the quality of life for these children by giving them a caregiver and then access to churches, schools, and after-school programs such as, you know, that we have here in the States, like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, or the Boys and Girls Clubs, just to kind of give them protective factors in their lives so that they can be successful later on.
Can you tell us a little bit about why this need came up? Why is there such a need for orphan care in Africa, and particularly in South Africa?
Well, in the late 1990s, I visited South Africa several times. You know, we had conducted basketball camps and some medical seminars with basic mission teams. And I was exposed to something I'd never seen before in my life, a child-headed household. Of which now we found, you know, after those years, we found out that South Africa is the home to about 500,000 families that are child-headed. So when you go into a home where children are taking care of themselves, it kind of hits you as a Christian to say, you know, how can this be? You know, where's the government? Where's the Church of Jesus Christ? And so it hit home. And so when I left for the last time in the late 1990s, I began to conduct some research on the orphan crisis in South Africa, and found that, according to UNICEF, it was a home to about 3.9 million orphan and abandoned children. And so the numbers were staggering. And so then I began to look at Africa as a whole, and because of the various reasons, mainly, you know, AIDS-related illnesses, sub-Saharan Africa is the home to approximately 58 million of those children. And so it just burned our hearts, and so we decided to spend several years researching on what we can do. And so we started the South African Children's Resiliency Project in the early 2000s, incorporated as a 501c3, and now we're in South Africa building homes and recruiting caregivers. And so that's the reason we went, just to kind of try to do our part. I know 58 million is a large number, but we never looked at it like we could help all 58 million, but we can help some of them, and so that's what we're doing.
Now, this is a huge problem and epidemic there, I would say, in Africa, and yet the ministry of the gospel is going forth through this great work that you're doing. Now, this is you're Christians. This is a Christian ministry. How does that interplay with the process of caring for these kids?
Well, obviously, for funding, you know, having a 501c3 Christian ministry as opposed to just a church ministry, it opens up so many opportunities to get businesses and corporations involved in helping your organization to, you know, basically say, you know, even though we have a spiritual element of our ministry, we do have a number of humanitarian things that we're doing. I mean, we're feeding, sheltering, and housing children. And so there are a number of Fortune 100 companies, and some of them are listed on our website, that are interested in our humanitarian things, but obviously they can never give to a church. And so we've tied the two together, and so a lot of our sponsorships comes from churches, businesses, and individuals, because it is an expensive process to basically provide the main care for children and a caregiver in a proper three-bedroom home. And so that's kind of how we've tied the two. Obviously, as Christians, we know the importance of, you know, presenting the gospel to a lost and dying world, but you also have to show them, you have to live the gospel. And these children need more than just a gospel presentation. I mean, they need a home, they need clothing, they need schooling and resources. And so we show them the love of God, and through showing them the love of God, eventually they come to find out that the reason we're doing it is because of Jesus Christ. And so they begin to ask questions, and after several years, they want to be a part of God's family. So a number of our children have received Christ. So we show them the love of God, And once we demonstrate to them, they say, you know, I want this love. And so that's kind of how we tie the two together.
Now, this is a ministry that you felt called to after visiting South Africa. But what was your background? What is it that brought you to South Africa in the first place? And how did this desire and the provisions of God come together to allow you to actually see this ministry come to fruition?
Well, obviously, it's a calling. The Holy Spirit puts a burden on your heart, and you follow that lead until you have peace that you're doing the right thing. But my background is in education. You know, I've been an English teacher basically all my life, and been involved in various schools, as you know, from anywhere from a middle school English teacher to principal of the school. Also, I lectured and did some adjunct work at various universities in Northeast Florida. And also a basketball coach, and I'm still a basketball coach, which is kind of funny because, and I was involved in singles ministry and college and career. And so the door opened to go to South Africa with some mission teams in the late 90s. We saw the need. God put a burden on our hearts. I want to say our hearts, Joanna and me, and we felt the call. And once we surrendered to basically go to South Africa and do something. At the time, we didn't know what we were going to do. We thought maybe start an orphanage, do something with these children. And the orphanage grew into a project that basically is beyond an institution. We're actually rebuilding families, and we're using caregivers in South Africa, mainly, grandparents, because they're the ones who haven't been infected with the virus. Because it's pandemic, everybody's been affected by AIDS, but they haven't been infected. And a number of them were just retirees. You know, they were living on pensions. And so we went and recruited them in churches and said, how would you like to spend the rest of your lives basically, with meaning and purpose? And that's raising other people's children. So that's kind of how it came into being. And, my background, again, is in education. And it's still an important part of our lives, because if we don't educate these children, then all we're doing is providing food and shelter for them. So it's still a big part of our lives. So basically, through education, through church ministries, the door is open to visit South Africa, and now we live there.
Now, that's interesting. Without the education, without the full framework that you guys are providing, you're really just prolonging an inevitable crisis that they're eventually going to fall back into poverty and a wayward way of life. But this is a unique structure that you have for the orphans there. You didn't build a huge, massive center for all the orphans to come and live and nurses to come and care for them. You're providing family care. That's different, and yet something that often, I just love the act of dignity that it can give to these children outside of just another orphanage. Is that really, you talked about wanting to, initially maybe build an orphanage. What is it that drove you away from that to do this project instead?
Well, my doctoral dissertation at the University of North Florida was on resiliency in at-risk African-American college students. I basically conducted research, case studies of successful African-American university students who had come from, low socioeconomic backgrounds, no parents, so they were orphaned, but yet they had received academic scholarships throughout the Southeast. And I thought, most of those kids end up incarcerated on drugs, or they drop out of school. But there are a number of those kids who achieve academically. And I said, I'd be interested in hearing their stories. So this whole concept of resiliency grew out of what they told me about their lives. And I realized at that point that, you don't have to have biological mothers and fathers to be successful, at least academically, in this world. But you do have to have caregivers. And where the weakness was in these African countries that I'd visited and researched their orphan care, that was the one thing that was lacking. They had institutions. They had roofs over their heads. They had food. They had obviously had social workers and caregivers who were paid salaries to care for these children. But one thing they lacked is a permanent caregiver. So I saw that as a weakness. So I began to talk to the government, which they were in favor, because if you go to South Africa now, you can't open an institutionalized orphanage in South Africa. They're interested in building families. And so a lot of this grew out of just research and communication with government officials, and they said, we want to, give you a chance to implement your project. And we have our problems, but they have that element, that protective factor that I found to be key and all these at-risk African-American university students, and that was a permanent caregiver. Because all of our kids that come into our project, they are placed in legal custody of a caregiver. So our institution, you know, our organization, if you will, we don't have custody of these children. These grannies who take in these children are the legal guardians. What we do is provide all the resources. Now, we do have the look and feel of an institution because all the houses that we have built are all clustered together in one property, and that's why we call it a children's village. But at the end of the day, these grannies are the primary caregivers. They do the child rearing. We do all the other stuff. We provide the housing, the food. I mean, not really the food. They actually have a social grant of about $60 to $70 a month that helps them pay for food. But outside of food, we get no help from the government. So we provide their schooling, we pay their school fees, their transportation, their utilities, and obviously the upkeep of their houses. And so that's kind of how it grew into this project. And there are a number of other protective factors that were in the lives of these successful at-risk African-American university students. And we're just trying to see if these things are applicable to South African children. And so far they are.
My first overseas experience was a short-term mission trip to Kenya. And within the first week of being there, we went to an orphanage. And I'm not exaggerating here. I'm sure you've seen similar examples of this. The huts in which these kids were living in were basically just tinfoil roofs and lean-tos. Like, they weren't even actually physical structures. And, you know, that was, it just floored me about the great need, and these kids were basically just going to be there for a short period of time until they were, you know, old enough to panhandle on the street. This is a huge issue that's affecting Africa as a whole. How much of a difference can the program that you've instituted have on the greater needs of that community?
Obviously, if you started an institutionalized orphanage, of which there are a number where we are, you do provide food and shelter for children, but you don't give them that quality of life. And so basically, with our project, you know, we only take children that are under 5 years old. They come into the project. Now, we'll take a few older children because they're siblings. You know, there's no way we can break up a family. We just can't justify, you know, bringing in, three kids. And because one is 7 or 8, we don't want the 7 or 8-year-old because our research tells us that we need to get these children early. And basically, they are allowed to live with these grannies under their care until they finish school. And that means, you know, they can go, in South Africa, it's called matric, which is graduation from high school, but also through university. And if they want to go to graduate school, we've already talked to our children, you can live under the care of this caregiver until you finish school. And so basically we're giving them, anywhere from 15 to 20 years of a proper home, proper structure, resources. So at the end of the day, if these kids aren't successful, and I just mean academically and socially, then all they have to do is look in the mirror and say, you know, it's my fault because I've been provided every resource that a person in a middle-class home has been provided, and so I should be accountable. And we feel that's what's going to happen with our kids. We give them these protective factors, and at the end of the day, and it's working. You know, the kids that have been with us for 7, 8 years, you see a huge difference in the quality of their overall being, their intellect, just their social and spiritual being. It doesn't mean we don't have problems because, you know, these kids now are teenagers. See, the first kids that we brought in, 2008 are now turning into teenagers. And so, you know, we have a little bit of rebellion, but they're children. But at the end of the day, we just feel like their quality of life has been increased to the point to where we feel like they will be successful. And the government is tending to say, you know, we agree with you. It seems to be working. So, we have this one location outside of Pietermaritzburg, which is a town near Durban. And we just opened up another location about 30 minutes from us. And like I said, we have our problems, but they're families. So we're happy that that it's moving forward.
Now, this is a program that you started back in 2005. It's taken you a few years to get the first kids into your program. You've watched them grow up. Can you give us a report as to some of the things that you've been able to see as you've brought in grandparents from the local churches and the communities to work with these kids? Can you tell us a little bit about, put a face on some of these kids that our listeners can be excited about?
Oh, man, I can tell you. Well, everyone has a unique story, and some of the stories are incredible, as you can imagine. I mean, one of the pagan things that are taught in the townships or in and around South Africa, obviously with age, you've got these Sangomas, or we call them Izitagazelos, which are witch doctors. You know, they're actually teaching men in their communities that if they have HIV, if they'll have sexual relations with virgins, it can eradicate themselves of HIV. Well, the problem with teaching those things to these men, most children that are, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old have already had sexual relationships. So they go after toddlers. And the reason I mention that, because we have a young girl, her name's Ayanda Shlangwana, and one day she'll be able to share her testimony. You know, she's how old now, Joanna?
15.
She's 15 now, but when she was 2 years old, she was raped and left and abandoned in a field north of where we live. But, you know, God had other plans for her life. So instead of her dying, a police helicopter doing a routine patrol over that area, one of the pilots spotted her body, landed a helicopter, brought her body to a local hospital where she recovered from her injuries. But obviously they, you know, they couldn't find extended family members, so they were put in the foster care program. She eventually made it to our children's village, where I think when she was 12 years old, she received Jesus Christ. She's going to a local high school, and she's achieving academically. She's loved. She's got a great testimony. She desires one day to be a pediatrician. And our project is designed to where we're going to provide all the resources we can to make sure that one day this young lady becomes a doctor. And imagine her testimony, where she'd be able to tell, you know, people talk about their struggles in life. Her story is always going to start, you know, when I was 2 years old, I was raped and left to die. I mean, that's how her story starts. But how her story ends, we don't know. But we know that she loves the Lord Jesus Christ. She's a, and just, you know, her favorite song is Glorious Day by Casting Crowns. And just to hear her sing that, you know, as a real orphan, you know, we've all been orphaned and adopted into God's family. But this is these are real live orphan children who, in this world at least, they don't have biological mothers and fathers, most of them. And now she has grown to know that she has a heavenly father. He's a father to the fatherless. And so her testimony is just grand, and she's only one of many. And you can go to our website. We used to put their bios on the website, but now our kids are becoming teenagers, and so we've decided to remove them because some of them come from horrific things that have happened in their lives. But her face and her name is on our website, so you can look her up. Her name's Ayanda. You can't miss her. She's a beautiful child. But these are the lives that we're changing by putting them in families. And so we have great things for her, and we just feel like one day when she does become a doctor, she's going to travel around South Africa, may even make it to the United States and be able to share her testimony about what God has done in her life. And so that's one face, but there are many.
I cannot even wrap my mind around what you just said, the idea of someone at 2 years old being raped and to cure somebody from HIV. That is just astronomical. It puts into perspective the first world problems that we're complaining about here in the Western world. Wow, what a profound ministry that you are having there with the South African Children's Resiliency Project. I know, though, that you do not take a salary through your project. You are a missionary. You're raising all of your own support, and there's a lot of needs that your ministry has. Can you share with us a little bit about how our listeners who might be listening in to that are passionate about what you're doing and they want to get behind what you're doing, how they can be a part of supporting your work, your family's work, and this project?
Yeah, obviously we were creative in what we were trying to accomplish, because I wasn't a big fan of public charities where a bulk of the money went to pay salaries and benefits of their CEOs and their board of directors. So it was really puzzling thing for me to say, well, how can you start a charity and not collect any salary from it? And then I tell people, I'm no yogi, but I'm smarter than the average bear. And I just started thinking, you know what, if my wife and I can serve as missionaries, then we can serve our project, and then we can have churches support us and help us to pay our bills. And that way we can raise money through our charity to go right to the project. So basically 100% of the things that come through our charity, you know, goes to the children's villages, you know, to pay for, buildings and property and vehicles and insurance, those type of things. And so there's actually two ways. Obviously, if their church is interested in supporting a type of project like this, of which, you know, we're going to be in one there near you guys at Faith, you know, some new church for us. And so we hope to partner with them through our ministry. And then our 501c3 is designed for businesses. And so sometimes there are businesses, there are Fortune 100 companies that do matching gifts. So we have a number of, you know, like Allstate, for example. I'll just give it them because they're the ones that stand out to me. You know, they're obviously their employees are allowed to choose their charities as long as they're approved charities. And then through their giving program, then Allstate matches up to a certain amount. So basically every month we get money from Allstate through their employees. And we have found there are a number, and we can go, you know, there's Google, and there's, you know, there's so many others that do that. And so there might be some listeners that say, you know, my business might do that, and I give to charities. And so they might not only give to our organization, but then they're finding that their company will match a certain dollar amount. And so that's been very successful for us. So there's two ways, through your local church or through giving to our charity directly or through their business. You know, there was a long time ago, people just gave to the United Way. Well, you know, a lot of Fortune 100 companies don't operate that way. They allow their employees to determine where they give their money. And so there's just a number of options to give to help with what we're trying to accomplish in South Africa.
And we certainly want to give you that support, but also to support the work that you're doing with prayer, because it is such a dark project that you have to break into as the salt and light there with this program. The South African Children's Resiliency Project, we have been talking with Bob and Joanna Graham, who served this ministry faithfully for now over 10 years as they work with the orphan population in the continent of Africa. Bob, thank you so much for joining us for this Missions Emphasis Month, and share with us a little bit about your ministry. And we will be supporting you and praying for you as you go forward.
Well, thanks so much for having us.
We hope you enjoyed this interview made possible by our ministry at Songtime Radio. You can find out more information about our ministry by visiting our website at songtime.com, where you can find this and other interviews on our podcast series, as well as our weekday broadcast, which includes teaching, interviews, and music. We also want to encourage you to sign up for our free monthly newsletter. It's got encouraging articles, and there is no obligation. To find out more information about our ministry, again, visit our website at songtime.com. This ministry is made possible by people just like yourself. We are 100% supported by our listeners. So if you have been blessed today, why not join with the many voices together for that one message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with your donation to the Songtime Ministry. To make a donation, you can do so online at our website at songtime.com, as well as by mail. Write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. Make a donation over the phone. It's 508-362-7070. On behalf of our entire Songtime staff and our own Dr. John DeBrine, the founder here at Songtime, who encourages you to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace, from Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller. God bless.